Sometimes we hear something so often that it goes in one ear and out the other. Like the other day, I was just thinking about this feast, and I looked at the title, Our Lord Jesus Christ, King of the Universe. That's quite a title, isn't it? But it can easily go in one ear and out the other. But the more I thought about it, I said, that's sort of weird. King of the Universe? Really? And then I realized, of course, it's a paradox. What is a paradox? Well, here's a great definition from the Oxford English Dictionary. And it goes like this. A paradox. A seemingly absurd or contradictory statement or proposition which, when investigated, may be found to be true. It's absurd, but when investigated, it's proven to be true. Jesus Christ, King of the Universe, it is a paradox. I'll get back to that paradox in a minute, but let me just share another one with you as an example. In Shakespeare's Hamlet, the title character states the following, I must be cruel to be kind. Now, on the surface, again, this seems kind of strange. It doesn't seem to make much sense. How can someone convey kindness by being cruel? In this case, Hamlet is speaking of his plans to kill Claudius, because you see what Claudius did? He killed Hamlet's father. And then Hamlet's mother marries Claudius, but she doesn't know that Claudius had killed his father. So Hamlet says, I need to be cruel to be kind. I need to get rid of that guy because my mother should not be married to the man who murdered her husband. But it's a paradox to be cruel to be kind. And then we come to today's paradox, Jesus Christ, King of the Universe. Wait a second. And people have been saying, wait a second, for 2,000 years. They've been saying, I don't know what those Christians have been smoking, but this can't be true. After all, Jesus had 33 years to live. He had a public ministry that lasted for 3 years, and he never went farther from the distance of what would be Calgary to Sundry. And you're telling me he's the King of the Universe? Get a life. You got to be kidding me. But we do believe that, because we as Christians believe something else. We believe that this Jesus is both man and God. And that is the fundamental paradox of the Christian faith. And it's a paradox that we as Catholics enact at every Mass, because we say here, in this bread and in this wine, it's also the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Jesus Christ. It's another paradox. And this is the thing about Christianity, particularly Catholic Christianity. Our faith is full of paradoxes. But the more we understand that reality, we can come to see with clarity what St. Paul saw. You need to appreciate that he saw this claim that Jesus is both God and man to be a paradox, an insult, and actually a blasphemy. And it was only once he met Jesus on the road to Damascus, it was only after St. Paul had come to realize the historical reality of the resurrection of Jesus Christ, that everything began to make sense. And so we heard in today's epistle, in fact, Christ has been raised from the dead. He is the first fruits of those who have died. Did you hear that? In fact, it's a fact. There is no event in the ancient world that has greater historical veracity than the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And because St. Paul had come to a place where now life was governed by the resurrection, he looked at history in a way that completed his Jewish understanding. Jewish people always had an understanding that history is linear. We live in a world today where people see history more as circular. It's just going around and around and around and around and around. It will never, 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 never end. That is not the Christian worldview. We see history as being linear. It is unfolding. It is going somewhere. It will reach a climax. And when that happens, I have good news for you. Woo! Death will be defeated. Tomorrow, the Toronto Argonauts are going to be defeated. But in the end, death is going to be defeated. And, says St. Paul, it's going to be better than any victory parade. For he writes, when all things are subjected to Jesus, then the Son himself will also be subjected to the one who put all things in subjection under his feet, that God might be all in all. It's a mouthful. I can't even read it. But here's the point. Paul is saying that the time will come when God is going to be all in all. Now, I have a pretty limited brain, and I have trouble comprehending this. And so thankfully, although we need to state that Jesus Christ is King of the universe, that there's a practical way in which we live that out day by day. And so what it means to say Jesus Christ is Lord of the universe is easier for me to understand than Jesus Christ is Lord of the universe. Pope Francis put it this way. The starting point of salvation is not the confession of the sovereignty of Christ. That is, Jesus Christ is the King of the universe. That's not the starting point of salvation. Rather, our Pope says, we are to imitate Jesus' works of mercy through which he brought about his kingdom. The one who accomplishes these works shows that he has welcomed Christ's sovereignty. Now get this, Pope Francis has ways of saying words at time where you think, that is just beautiful. And this is one of those lines, I think. So what he says, it's not that we, first of all, welcome his sovereignty, but we have opened our hearts to Christ's charity. You see, it's opening the heart to the charity. And this is at the very charism of Pope Francis's papacy, this idea of the heart being opened to the charity of Jesus Christ. But we've got a problem. You see, we want a king who's in a palace. We want a king who drives a Rolls Royce. We want a king who wears a crown. We want that kind of king. But darn it, Jesus just won't play along according to our rules. And so he says to us, if you truly embrace this paradox that I am the king of the universe, then you are going to live your earthly life in a certain way. If you have time, I'd invite you to reread that passage from Ezekiel sometime this weekend. And notice particularly the verbs that are used. Let me just read a couple of them again. Verbs like to search, to look over, to gather the dispersed, to lead into pasture, to bring to rest, to seek the lost, to lead back the confused, to bandage the wounded, to heal the sick. That's the nature of the church. And can I say, as a priest, it's particularly the vocation of pastors. You see, the sheep of God have really good noses, and they can sort of distinguish between a pastor who's really a pastor and a pastor who is a hireling. A pastor who is really a pastor is in it for the sheep. A pastor who is a hireling is in some ways in it for himself. And we all know what happens in the church when we have hirelings. But we also know what happens in a church where we have pastors. Those people who by their very life want to try, however imperfectly, to embody the character of Christ so that hopefully the people whom they are seeking to lead, they are seeking to love, they are seeking to guide, see imitated in their pastors a quality of the character of the true King that they are inspired to want to do the same. And so we need to pray for pastors to truly be pastors, to realize that they are servants of the King of the universe. And as they live out this life of pastoral responsibility, may they be able to inspire the people entrusted to their care more and more to take to heart what Jesus says in today's gospel. You see, it's not enough for us to admire the Mother Teresa's, the Dorothy Day's, to get out of the way and let other people do these great works of mercy and we applaud them. No, it's not enough for us to look at a distance those who do good works. But sometimes we might say, what should I do? What can I do? When is enough enough? And I think in a sense, this is the wrong place to start. It's not so much particularly the exact works that we do, but it's the attitude that we bring to our lives where we seek to imitate Jesus in every way. in his kindness, in his respect, his welcoming way, his concern, his thirst for justice. In short, you and I are to have a magnificent obsession. We are to be obsessed with wanting to live like Jesus. And although it's hard, like he's really clear, we don't look at these passages and say, I don't think I know what he's talking about. We might have difficulty getting our mind around the fact that he's the king of the universe. But here's the kicker. In the twilight of life, we will be judged on our love for, closeness to, and tenderness towards our brothers and sisters. Upon this, says Jesus in today's gospel, will depend our entry into or exclusion from his kingdom, where he is the universal king. Jesus has opened his kingdom to us. And I love St. Peter's, because one of the things I think that this congregation is truly seeking to always do and to grow in is trying to take to heart what it is to live like Jesus. Of course we fall short. That's why we have confession. Come, you'll like it. That's why we have a community where people have various ministries where they are able to extend to others that compassion and that care. And we are called to be a people who are willing to live in this world with the tension of many paradoxes. But as we live with those paradoxes, as we truly believe that Jesus, you are the King of the universe, because we profess faith in that paradox, may we here at St. Peter's evermore become the kind of community where our collective heart and our individual hearts are opened to Jesus's charity. This is a good day. This is a great festival, because we know who the real king is, the humble king, the servant king, Jesus Christ, the king of the universe.